Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy, Yankee Doodle do or die. A real live nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart, she's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It is Sunday, August 26th, 2007. This is the Political Universe Radio Show, and I am still, as I have been all previous weeks, Jason Easley. On this week's show, we're going to talk a little bit about the NIE. We're going to talk about what if George W. Bush ran the History Channel. We're going to talk about ABC News and Dennis Kucinich. We're going to talk about Florida losing possibly their delegates because they want to jump ahead of everybody else, or almost everyone else, for their primary. And we'll have the Joe Biden Minute. Well, let's get right down to it and bring in our good friend, the man we know and trust to talk about national intelligence, Will. Hi, Will.
Hi.
How are you, man?
Good. How are you?
Oh, that was an awkward hello. I'm just like, why? You're so damn chippy. Well, dude, there's a guy running a chainsaw right outside my house.
Oh, okay.
A chainsaw.
A chainsaw.
Who the hell's running a chainsaw on a Sunday in the middle of a college town?
Exactly.
Yeah, this sounds like a really bad slasher movie, so if I suddenly leave the show, you're going to find out. Okay, let's bring in George. Are you excited, George? Ready to greet George?
Yes, I am ready to greet George.
Okay.
Drum roll, please.
Wait a minute. We're going to introduce him. You all know him from 411 Mania. He is the writer of the most excellent, except for the Political Universe, news report on the internet. He is the man who does Scene Anatomy 101. You know him, you love him, a well-known and beloved and respected man who has a published work of fiction available for your purchase. Ladies and gentlemen, say hi to George.
Hello, hi, gentlemen.
George. Hello.
Hello there.
How was that for an introduction?
I was touched. It got me right here.
I thought you should have been. That was really good stuff. I just happened to be working on it. Okay, guys, we're going to run through various topics today. I know how much, we both know, George, how much Will likes national intelligence estimates.
Yes, he does.
So I figured we'd start there for a few minutes. It just makes Will happy to say it. National intelligence estimate. Okay, you guys heard about the national intelligence estimate on Iraq this week?
Yes.
A little, very briefly, yes.
Very briefly?
Yeah, I was able to get myself caught up just so much.
Yeah, I was briefed on it, too.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, okay, now were you guys briefed on it, or did you read it before you voted?
I read it. I read most of it.
Oh, well, then whenever you cast your vote and you have to run for president later, you'll be fine. Okay. Okay, so just because you guys aren't that familiar with it, and because I'm a really nice person, I'm going to give you the rundown here. Basically, some of the judgments, it was the actual document itself was only about 3 pages of judgments. The NIE is a consensus from, I believe, all 16, there's 16 intelligence agencies? Yeah, 16, in the United States. They come to a consensus on an issue. They release their judgments. Now, the document's about 10 pages, but about 7 of that is mandated filler, guidelines and stuff like that. There's only about 3 pages of judgments for the whole thing. One of the real big judgments that everybody quoted on was the level of overall violence, including attacks and casualties among civilians, remains high. Iraq sectarian groups remain unreconciled. The Al-Qaeda in Iraq retains the ability to conduct high-profile attacks, and to date, Iraq's political leaders remain unable to govern effectively. There have been modest improvements in economic output, budget execution, and government finances, but fundamental structural problems continue to prevent the sustained progress in economic growth and living conditions. Okay, that's pretty much the overall judgment. What does that tell you? Either of you. First off, if you're going to read this document, and this is, I just gave you in like a paragraph, the nutshell, the major conclusions are.
They still have a long way to go.
Well, what does that tell you? If you have to make a policy, stay or go, because that's what the question we're facing now.
I would probably stay because, okay. You know, I would probably stay still because things are still a bit shaky. And until this government can, you know, run its own and the military, they can get a military that can protect themselves, then after that happens, then I think that we can pack up our bags and head for home.
We're going to stay the course like George W. Bush.
Well,
I know, I just put you in a corner there. George, disagree with Will.
I definitely agree to a point. You know, like there definitely seems to be a, you know, like just basically just seems to be situations where things are still, like, you know, incredibly shaky, but at the same time, like, it feels like all that's needed is for, you know, the Iraqis to really kind of, you know, step up their game before we can get the hell out of there.
Okay, so you would not advocate an immediate pullout.
I would like to see what happens, you know, like in the next couple of months, just to see what happens.
Yeah.
But I still feel myself like with one foot out the door over there. But at the same time, you know,
I will tell you, this report projected for the next 6 to 12 months, and it projected a situation where things are going to remain about the same or worse.
Ugh.
Well, that's not good.
Well, in that case.
Yeah, I'll go a little further, because I asked you the first question. I have a whole lot more from this report. The intelligence community assessed the emergence of a bottom-up security initiative to deal with al-Qaeda, principally among Sunni Arabs, and focused on combating al-Qaeda in Iraq, represent the best prospect for improved security over the next 6 to 12 months. But we judge these initiatives will only translate into widespread political accommodation and civilian internal stability if the Iraqi government accepts and supports them. The problem is that these kind of bottom-up movements, if they start out against Iraq, they could easily turn on the government itself, is what the report concluded. The report said Iraq security forces aren't ready to work on their own. Iraqi security forces involved in combat operations with coalition forces have performed adequately and in some units demonstrated increasing professional competence. However, we judge that the ISF has not improved enough to conduct major operations independent of the coalition on a sustained basis in multiple locations, and that the ISF remains reliant on the coalition for important aspects of logistics and combat support. The report said the government's placed itself in a precarious position and included population displacement due to violence is causing destabilization in the whole country. Those are basically the major conclusions. And like I said, this report said in 6 to 12 months, things are going to be about the same or worse.
What does it tell you about the president's troops feeling about Iraq, you know?
What's that, time to get out of Iraq?
It just doesn't really... Definitely doesn't help.
Yeah.
The troop surge doesn't work.
Yeah.
Is what we're finding out. The troop surge hasn't. What the troop surge has done is where the troops are. There's only 30,000 of them, but where they deploy the extra units, they're very effective.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, in order to carry out this kind of strategy, you would need another 160,000 troops.
Yeah.
They would need to double the size of the force. They have to have enough troops so they can clear. And clear and control every area of the country.
And the problem that we're going to have... 30, I'm sorry.
Right. Well, 30,000 troops isn't enough to clear and control a whole country like Iraq.
Right.
I mean, that's why this whole troop surge discussion is sort of silly. You know, people can get all mad and support the surge and this and that or be against it. The problem is just... the strategy Petraeus has implemented is the right strategy. He doesn't have the manpower to pull it off, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it comes down to. I'll give you my conclusion real fast. If you don't have the manpower to come in and fix this upright, then we're going to have 162,000 troops there forever.
That's basically what it feels like. It feels like we are kind of feeding a dependency.
Yeah.
That they're having.
Oh,
like, I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, because the Iraqi government knows it's in power as long as the U.S. troops are there.
Right.
They don't have to do anything. Their security's safe.
Oh, yeah. And they're going on vacation and everything like that. They're having a grand old time, like, you know, during the month of August and stuff. And then we have, at the same time, the whole point of the troops that were supposed to, you know, that were there as soon as, you know, like, you know, Saddam's regime was to be brought down, was to not only stabilize Iraq but to also train that new army to basically take over. When they can't do it, when they, you know, like when their army isn't getting things done, and all we're doing is bringing in more troops to do their job, it's the whole teach a man to fish thing.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's what it is. It's Vietnam all over again.
Yeah,
this is Vietnam as far as feeding more troops in. And remember the myth. I mean, you guys don't remember. You probably read about the myth. I don't remember either. The myth of South Vietnam that could defend itself if the Americans pulled out, and it didn't really exist. The Vietnamese fell apart just because the Americans left. That's what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what's going to happen here. The Iraqi National Army is inadequate. And who's to blame, though? When all this comes down to push comes to shove, who's to blame? Do you blame the Americans? Do you blame the Iraqis? Where do you...
I think in a sense both of them are to blame.
I think both of them are to blame.
Because you have the Iraqis that are supposed to do their job and refuse to do it because they don't have to do it as long as the U.S. troops are there. And then you have the U.S. troops that are basically just kind of feeding that you know, like that dependence.
I think if you're going to blame, as far as Iraq, and you blame the Iraqi politicians or basically the American government for being so half-assed when they put the Iraqi government together. But you also blame the whole war strategy.
Accounting
for these things.
Well, that strategy was screwed from day one. You know, like the way, you know, like
we got to move on. We got to move on to a couple of lighter things you guys are really going to like. What if George W. Bush ran the History Channel? Is our next topic. Earlier this week, as you may or may not have read, Bush gave a speech at the National VFW Convention. He used the speech to reinterpret history, let's say, of every international American conflict going back to Korea and World War II. And he basically said, he basically framed all these conflicts in terms of fighting for freedom and how they tie into the war on terror. This is one of my favorite quotes from the whole speech. "The enemy who attacked us despises freedom and harbors resentment at the slights he believes America and the Western nations have inflicted on his people. He fights to establish his rule over an entire region. And over time, he turns to a strategy of suicide attacks destined to create so much carnage that the American people will tire of the violence and give up the fight." If this strategy sounds familiar, if this story sounds familiar, it is, except for one thing. The enemy I've just described is not Al-Qaeda, and the attack is not 9/11. And the empire is not the radical one envisioned by Osama bin Laden. Instead, what I've described is the war machine of Imperial Japan in the 1940s, its surprise attack on Pearl Harbor, and its attempt to impose its empire through Southeast Asia. Okay.
So he's basically just trying to compare this war to every single other, you know, war in existence.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is not the first time that he's tried to do this.
It's not just that. He has now managed to turn World War II into the same thing as the War on Terror. Maybe you guys missed this, but he now claims the Japanese attacked the Pearl Harbor because they hate our freedom.
I think from what I learned, they wanted our rubber industry or, you know, the petroleum industry.
It was territory, and they were trying to pull us into the war so that we didn't invade and intervene in Europe sooner.
Mm-hmm.
It was territory in the Pacific, which is what the Japanese wanted. But get this. Now the Japanese are now the same as Al-Qaeda, as they use suicide attacks to create carnage so the American people will tire and give up the fight. What he doesn't tell you is they use suicide attacks on the American military, not civilians.
Right.
Okay, so that was my favorite part of this speech, but there's more. He said the terrorists win if the U.S. is Iraq. Nothing new there. But, quote, "If we were to abandon the Iraqi people, the terrorists would be emboldened and use their victory to gain new recruits. As we saw on September 11th, a terrorist safe haven on the other side of the world can bring death and destruction to the streets of our own cities. Unlike in Vietnam, if we withdraw before the job is done, the enemy will follow us home. And that's why the security of the United States of America, we must defeat them overseas if we don't face them here." Well, that's not the real big news. The real big news is, he then said, if we would have stayed in Vietnam, we would have won. The lesson from Vietnam is we left too soon, and Vietnam fell. And the same thing's going to happen in Iraq.
This is what happens when Rove is too, is busy packing his bags.
Okay. This is, and he went on to reinterpret Korea, Vietnam. I mean, the speech is really long. I'd read more, but it's a huge.
In the American Revolution.
Korea, Vietnam, and Japan. No, just Korea, Vietnam, and Japan, because he's comparing the Far East. Because he said Japan became the democracy it is today because America dropped its atomic bomb, basically.
So basically, all we need to do is drop a couple of A-bombs on Iraq, and democracy will grow in its wake, like a pretty little flower.
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
A radioactive flower.
Yeah.
Maybe not in this case, drop atomic bombs, but he says if we sustain the fight, Iraq will end up just like Japan, and Japan has been the seed that carried democracy throughout the Asian region, right? Right? Quick, name three other democracies in the region that are strong. Yeah, but that's not his point. And he thinks Iraq can do the same thing in the Middle East. He's sticking to
I don't understand why people aren't calling him on his own stupidity. He's blatantly saying the dumbest things, and yet, you know, like everybody's just sitting there applauding. There's no accountability for anything that he's saying.
Well, on Washington's birthday, he was comparing the Revolutionary War to the War on Terror.
The War in Iraq, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure like we're supposed to be playing in that little.
This speech in front of the VFW actually was, well, we're the British in the Revolutionary War model. He doesn't want it that way. We're the Iraq and the U.S. are liberators, and Saddam's the British. But in the Revolutionary model, in reality, we're the British. Back to this speech. He basically reinterpreted American history all through the lens of neocon philosophy of spreading democracy at the barrel of a gun.
And this is a dangerous thing to do because now all of a sudden, you know, like you're feeding like your own fan base this tripe, and all they're going to do is pick it up and run with it. And next thing you know, you have, like, history books, you know, like, attempting to be rewritten.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
That's exactly what worries me is if people actually believe this nonsense, they would actually rewrite. They've done it in Japan. It's been done in Japan.
This is like Vince McMahon-style history. You know, like this.
Yeah, by a group that wants to rewrite history. They've been rewriting textbooks to explain a lot of the Japanese war crimes in World War II and what the Japanese did in World War II. Because they just, if they want to paint Japan in a positive light. And that's a good, what W is doing here is he's warping all of our foreign policy in the last, 67 years or so, and turning it into an excuse for his war in Iraq and the war on terror. Now, this should blow your mind, okay? Because when I read this speech, I almost felt, first of all, I almost fell before laughing. I just fell literally off the floor. If I could have fallen into the center of the earth, I probably would have. Because I thought, well, this is just unbelievable. There's no way anyone's going to believe this. You know what I mean? This is the entire narrative. He's making this up now. He's just changing whatever happened in the past.
I just don't get it.
We got another topic here. We got an ingrained topic. Remember how Dennis Kucinich got screwed in last week's ABC debate? He didn't get a question until the 30th minute.
Yeah.
Well, they did ABC after this. Did the post-debate poll who won the debate? Well, Kucinich supporters flooded it, and they boosted Dennis up because he had a big lead. Okay? Well, these are internet polls, so you're not exactly going for scientific variables or a really accurate measure of anything. It's just kind of for kicks. Well, ABC News didn't like the fact that Dennis won. So they took the poll down. But first, they removed Dennis from the poll. Then people emailed and complained. They took the entire poll down. A day later, they put the poll back up at night. Barack Obama had a lead. The conservative supporters came back and took the lead again, so they took the poll down for good. This is not the funniest part. Somebody at ABC News was so pissed at the conservative campaign, they cropped Dennis out of the post-debate candidate photo from the stage. They cropped him out of the photo on the ABC News website.
I swear, this is exactly what I was saying before.
Yeah, the media.
This is the media trying to manipulate everything.
Yeah.
Because Kucinich is one of those guys that did it without telling them.
And he was, well, see, he wasn't one of the chosen candidates.
Right.
Like, they, but you, you guys didn't watch this, but if you could go on YouTube or Finds or whatever, I'm sure, and watch it all in one piece, you would see how ignored everybody not named Clinton and Obama actually were. And you could just see, when, and then they got mad whenever Clinton supporters flooded the poll, because I guess that made the poll invalid because Hillary or Obama were supposed to win. So you know what? On our 411 poll, we have a bazillion Ron Paul supporters flooding the poll. Yeah, you know what? I guess if I was running a scientific poll, I would care. I don't care. In fact, you know, I actually came up with a better idea. So we're giving the poll a break. I'm going to put it up on the site tonight. We're giving the poll a break for a while. I'm going to actually ask supporters to email in for each candidate, and every week we're going to run under why I support a different, and it's going to be like why I support Barack Obama, and I'm going to ask for Obama supporters' emails, and they're going to be able to email in and tell us why they like their guy or their girl, in case of Hillary, and that's what we're going to do for the next, you know, however many weeks, and as long as I get enough email. I mean, it's, that's, I just wanted something participatory. I'm not setting out, like ABC News apparently, to make a political statement. I'm not big bad ABC News. They apparently thought that the Kucinich people made a mockery of their poll, so they took it down and didn't even explain anything.
So they're going to basically make a mockery of democracy, basically.
Yeah.
They didn't even offer people an explanation, because I'll be honest, I know George would be interested. I think he does the stuff on the site for the movies and he writes things. I'm going to give the people a full explanation, because honestly, I'm getting complaints every week about this poll. This poll's turning into a major headache. There's too many candidates in the race, and it probably is too early to do a poll right now at 411. So I'm going to give it a rest. I'm not putting it away for good. I'm just gonna. We're gonna take a little time off. We're gonna get some. We're gonna try a different feature. See if people take to that and like that. And the poll will be back. See, I'm gonna step up and give these people an explanation. I'm not gonna do something like ABC News would do. That to me seems just cheap and low.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you didn't like the result, you can't throw away the poll.
That's a sore loser tactic. That's like what a 5-year-old would do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and it's not.
That's something that Fox News would do.
That's something the Fox News has done.
Yeah, it is something Fox News has done. But can you believe that? Okay, I thought whenever they cropped him out of the photo on the ABC News website.
You know Murdoch is taking notes on that one.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole new level of creativity. It's one thing to take the poll down. It's one thing to take somebody's name off a poll. But to crop them out and pretend like they weren't there.
That's wrong.
How do you know that they didn't go back in time and prevent Dennis's parents from meeting?
Yeah.
You know, there's more than one way to erase a picture, you know.
You've all seen Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, can you believe that, though? I mean, that's amazing.
The whole poll is invalid, then.
The Kucinich people went back. They had it on their campaign website, which is how I found out about it. I was surfing around for news, and I saw this on their website. They complained. ABC went back and put the full picture back up, but the poll vanished. The poll is gone.
Mm-hmm.
They just took it down. I mean, and you know what? It's like I get it. If you're running an internet poll, the people that have the most support online are going to dominate the poll. And that's not the same as the candidates who are running in the race and doing well on registered voter polls.
Mm-hmm.
They're two different groups. The internet group is younger. They're less participatory. They're usually not, like a lot of people, this will be their first election or this will be the first time they've been motivated to vote. They're not going to show up in the scientific polls, which is why Ron Paul's at like 1%, but he dominates all the internet stuff, because that's where his base of support is. And if you're going to do a viewer poll or an internet poll or a reader poll, you have to just understand that. You know, you're not going to get an accurate picture of the whole electorate. You're getting a snapshot of this one medium. And I can't believe ABC News would just do that. Oh, and then we've got to move on to, you guys probably heard, or at least you heard my column, Michigan's going to move, trying to move the primary up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Florida has threatened to sue the DNC if the DNC attempts to take away their delegates from skipping ahead, because now Florida has tried to skip ahead South Carolina. Florida said they would consider legal action and protest the convention if the national party barred the state's delegates. This is a messy, 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 messy legal fight, because here's what the party rules say of 2008. states cannot hold a contest before February 5th except Iowa on January 14th, Nevada on the 19th, New Hampshire on the 22nd, and South Carolina on the 29th. Well, Florida felt they should be ahead of South Carolina, so they jumped to the 22nd. Which means that New Hampshire then has to move back another week to the 15th, which means Iowa had to move back to, well, they didn't officially move yet, but they were talking about moving back as far as, if they can't do January 7th, moving back to December 17th. If worse comes to worse and all these key LA states keep hopping ahead, Iowa would hold their caucus before Christmas.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
We can't keep, as I put in the column, Bill Richardson said, this is crazy. Biden said this is nuts. He released a statement, too. They can't do this. What the hell is going on?
Yeah.
You know, Howard Dean has no, he has. Okay, here's what's going to happen. I put it in the column. If Dean says all the delegates are barred, well, that doesn't really mean a whole lot, because whoever the nominee is, they control the rules committee of the convention. So if that means that effectively they can rewrite all the rules. The Florida delegates can show up, not be allowed on the convention floor, but as soon as the rules committee meets, if they decide the delegates count, which they probably would if, like, if the nominee is Hillary Clinton and she'd won Florida, then it's all moot. The Florida delegates could just stay, and there's no punishment. It's a joke. What's going on here is a joke, and it's disenfranchising candidates, lower-tier candidates, smaller candidates, like your good friend Joe Biden, George, mm-hmm. Like Kucinich, like Gravel, like Rob Paul on the Republican side, like almost all the Republicans who aren't the top four, and all the Democrats who aren't the top three. This is what people don't realize, and they're not saying it. People aren't even catching on to this. They're having their vote ripped out from under them. And they don't even realize it. You know what I mean? It's a joke. It's a disgrace. And Florida just needs to get over itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. They
Florida had their moment in the spotlight a few years back.
Yeah, really.
They screwed up the whole country in 2000. They don't need to be first. South Carolina is actually more representative,
mm-hmm.
and there's no real necessity of it. We're getting real quick. Because they were actually on schedule today, and we rambled on too much about the National Intelligence Assessment. So we're going to quickly do our little Joe Biden minute. George is going to pimp his stuff, and then I think it's about time to get home.
All right.
Wait, where is it at? Oh, no, because, you know, we can't have the Joe Biden minute without. Wait for it, guys. Here it comes. Well, come on. Well, there we go. By Joseph Helena Biden. Solemnly swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. Okay, that's enough of that. We're short on time today. Here, Joe didn't do too much this week, but he once again announced or brought out his plan to end the war in Iraq. Real quick, because I quote, this war must end, but it matters profoundly how we end it. As we leave, we must do everything we can not to leave behind chaos that undermines American security for a generation. That requires a lasting political settlement. Unfortunately, like President Bush, some of my Democratic colleagues are clinging to the fatally flawed premise that Iraq can be governed from the center by a strong national government that secures and supports the Iraqi people. President Bush is surging forces to buy more time for the central government to succeed. It cannot. Some of my colleagues, like Senator Clinton, kiss, believe that replacing Prime Minister Malachi and pressuring the central government will force it to get its act together. They, too, are wrong. There goes the vice presidency, Joe. Problem. That this fixation on a strong central government is the problem with our policy. There is no trust within the central government, no trust of the government by the people, no capacity of the Iraqi government to deliver security or services, and no prospect that will build that trust and capacity anytime soon. Replacing Maliki won't change that fast. Absent an occupation, we can't sustain. Or a dictator we cannot want, Iraq will not be governed from the center. There you go.
Wow.
That was pretty good stuff there, George.
I must quote the great philosopher, Lieutenant Frank Drebin, when he said, "The truth hurts, doesn't it, Habsburg? Oh, sure. Maybe not as much as jumping on a bicycle with a seat missing, but it hurts."
George, What do you got for us to pimp this week?
What's that?
What do you got to pimp this week, George?
This week I have a this week's edition of Scene Anatomy 101 will be a scene from the Academy Award-winning film Gladiator. And also on my UBS Evening Movie News report on Thursday, I will be putting up a poll where people can put in their choices of whether they prefer HD or Blu-ray to win the eventual war.
Oh, and you know, Ron Paul's going to win that poll.
Of course, because they just flood the internet. So.
Yeah, I'll be on that.
I may have to take the poll down if that's the case.
Yeah, it'll be HD Blu-ray then.
I'll erase Blu-ray from the picture.
For all the people that are still on VHS or Betamax.
Yeah, you'll crop Blu-ray out of the picture. Okay, okay, guys. Will, you got anything for us this week?
No, I don't. Not really. I just, I've just been reading on the internet that there's a lot more hypocrisy to Hillary Clinton than we've been reading lately. So,
That's a whole other issue. We might do that one of these weeks coming up because we could get home for days about that. Well,
yeah.
2 o'clock. We gotta run. We gotta get out of here. I guess our show got cut off last week because we went too long. So I think we might be taking next weekend off. What do you think, George? Is that good for you?
That'll work for me, yeah.
It's Labor Day.
Yep.
Okay. We might be able to take it next week off. Will, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
George, it's always a pleasure, George.
Always.
I feel like we could do this every day.
Yes, I have fun. I have my fun.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you guys soon. Have a great week. We'll see you as soon as we can. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.